I'm Steve Potter, and this is Cityscape. Contemporary Art Museum St. Louis celebrates its 10th year, beginning today with the opening of the exhibition Place is the Space, featuring site-specific work by six contemporary artists, one of whom joins us now. Inigo Manglano Avalle is a sculptor. Welcome to Cityscape.
Thank you.
And welcome to St. Louis, for that matter.
Thank you very much.
Dominic Malone is the chief curator of the Contemporary Art Museum St. Louis. Dominic, nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Dominic, could you take us back? I know you weren't here at the time. Let me just say that this whole celebration really is not just celebrating being here 10 years, but it's actually celebrating the building itself.
It is. It celebrates the 10-year anniversary of the building designed by Brad Klopfel of Allied Works Architecture in Portland. The building came about because the museum, which had been in two previous incarnations, once as the as the First Street Forum over on Laclede's Landing, beginning in 1980. And then in the late 90s, it moved to Grand Center in a different location. And so the sense of nomadic, kind of moving around of the museum really necessitated, I think, for the people who, Betsy Millard, who was the director of the museum back in the late 1990s, really saw the need for the museum to have a more fixed location, to really kind of insert itself more into the fabric of St. Louis. And so the plans for the building on 3750 Washington Boulevard were hatched, and in 2003 they opened.
And we'd have to say that it had a lot to do with what's happened to Grand Center in the last 10 years. It was one of the early guys.
It really was. It followed very quickly on the heels of the Pulitzer Foundation. And really, Brad's building was meant as a very interesting response to the dynamics of the Tadeo Ando building that opened, I believe it was in 2002.
You know, as a non-artist, a lot of us, when we go to a museum and see art, we're concentrating on the art. We forget perhaps how important the building is in that process. And Inigo, as an artist yourself, talk about that, the importance of the space where work is seen, and maybe specifically Contemporary Art Museum St. Louis, how you rate it as an artist.
Well, I mean, as an artist, I've dealt part of my subject matter is architecture and space, and so I'm schooled in architectural theory, so Allied Works and Brad Klopfel's design specifically was something that enticed me to be part of this project. I'm interested in its sort of its connection or disconnection, could be argued, between that and Tadeo Ando's Pulitzer. Mm-hmm. And so I'm keenly aware of the buildings, not just as spaces, but as sort of situations and or as ideas in and of themselves. So Tadeo Ando building is one way of thinking about a museum, and Brad Klopfel's building is another way. And, you know, they meet together in a very sort of interesting way. At times you think you don't know where the separation is, you know? So that's what intrigued me about Dominic's curatorial project, a kind of celebration of the anniversary of this building, and maybe as an artist then responding to architecture and responding perhaps with architecture to architecture.
Because your work, as the other artists in this exhibition, is site-specific. You designed it to be in this building, so we'll talk about that in just a second. Dominic, maybe we should say something about the architect. I believe Contemporary was the first building of that kind he designed, and then he went on to do quite a few more.
He did. He designed the University of Michigan Museum of Art, but more recently he opened a museum in Denver dedicated to Clifford Still, which is a really gorgeous building. And so, but this was, I think, a real landmark watershed, I think, for Brad. And I think the fact that he actually had the idea for us to co-curate an exhibition based on a talk that he gave here in late May. He talked about all of the concepts that went into the building of the building, mostly, you know, things that had to do with the sort of open, free space of the building, much of which had been closed up by the time that I got here with walls and so forth to you know, show art. And I was really inspired by his talk and, you know, approached him and said, I'd really like to open the building back up. And he said, you know, why don't we co-curate a show? And, you know, to my mind, typically architects really kind of, you know, build their buildings and move on and are on to, you know, the, you know, three other, 10 other next things that they're onto. But Brad has always maintained a great fondness for this building and has always, you know, really maintained an interest in how artists have used it, how the museum has lived in it. And so it's really quite a very special relationship.
Well, to each of you then, what makes this building special?
Well, I think one of the interesting things about this building is how a concrete and stainless steel mesh building can be so transparent and so light. And part of it has to do with how the building allows the light that it does into the space without compromising the
natural light.
Natural light, without compromising the necessity for a lot of wall space. And the other thing is how something as heavy as concrete flows within the space is almost, and I think Brad's idea was to almost create a ribbon in the space, a kind of a ribbon of concrete.
To me, the building has had this incredible, I think, it's this great stage for artists, and I think Brad always wanted it to be that way. 10 years on, it still remains an incredibly flexible building. It's a building that I think now I've had the experience of artists who have actually sought out the opportunity to show in the space because of its dynamics, because of what they know about the building. But also in the 3 years that I've been here and have worked with artists, so many of them have really responded and worked with the building. I think in the last museum I worked at, I'm probably going to get in trouble here, but I often found that artists were really working against the building or had to sort of overcome some of the limitations of that building. Yet Brad's remains incredibly flexible and incredibly generous, I think, to artists. And for a contemporary art space, that's all you could ever ask for.
I want to ask Inigo about his specific work specifically in here just a second. But briefly, could you mention the other artists and how they've and how their work reflects the best part of that building?
Sure. And Brad and I, you know, really chose the artists based not only on their, you know, kind of continuous use of site specificity as a way that they make their work, but also we looked at different principles that really define the building. Transparency, as Inigo mentioned, the public accessibility of the building, notions of surface, the different surfaces of the building. And so, you know, someone like Jill Downen, who when we started the show, building the show was based in St. Louis, is now in Kansas City. She revisits a work that she had created in the building in 2004 that took a very organic look at the relationship between architecture, art, and the visitor, kind of building these morphing shapes that came out of the walls and floor. But when she deinstalled the piece at the end of that exhibition in 2004, she noticed that these marks, these scars had been left over. And so she reconstructs that. And so, you know, that deals with surface and also a little bit of the history of the building. Carlo Rocha and Stefan Schreinen do a piece on the windows that creates this really dazzling, dynamic, almost kinetic pattern that really alters your perception of the building as you move through it.
And there are two more?
Yes, Dominique Pettigon creates a sound installation that occupies our performance space but also our mezzanine area and that kind of carries you through with both abstract noises and spoken word. And then Virginia Overton creates these very elegant uses of raw materials to address the intersections of the building but also the voids and the spaces in between.
Well, Inigo, let's talk about your contribution. You designed two works for this.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about them.
Well, one of them is titled Die Hütte, which means the hut, and it's a large sort of monumental volume within the largest volume of the building. And the other one is a grid of very modest, quite elegant beehives called Beehive Grid 5x6. So I wanted to, with these works, kind of respond to the different volumes of the building and insert architecture within architecture for this building. So the hut, if one wants to call it, is a large 16 by 16 by 16 foot cube of vertical running burnt cedar that sort of posits itself in the central volume of the main gallery. It is uses a kind of vernacular approach to achieving a burnt surface for the cedar.
And the other piece?
And the other piece, Beehive's grid 5x6, it's 30 beehives. It's kind of very minimalist consideration of architecture for architecture. And here I'm referring to the building housing the beehives and the beehives then housing what would eventually be the architecture of the bees.
That is Chicago-based sculptor Inigo Mangolano of Valle. Also joining us today, Dominic Malone of the Contemporary Art Museum St. Louis. Place is the space, opens this evening. There's a reception from 7 to 9, and it runs through
December 29th.
December 29th. Contemporary Art Museum, St. Louis, on Washington Boulevard here in Grand Center. If you go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page, we'll have a link to the Contemporary's website. We hope people will come out sometime during the exhibition run, and we welcome you to St. Louis, and thank you for being here, and thank you for coming as well.
Thanks. Not at all.
And right now we want to spend a moment with Alex Hoyer. He is a producer here on Cityscape. He also is our unofficial official donut correspondent. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve.
And my question to you is, what is the deal with all the donuts in this place?
Okay, so we had something called the Great STL Donut Taste-Off. It's an idea that came up about 2 weeks ago here. And it was this morning a blind taste test of donuts from 15 different donut shops in the St. Louis area.
How different can donuts be?
There were a ton of different donuts, and that's actually what made the contest somewhat hard because we couldn't just try glazed donuts from one. There were fruit-filled, there were chocolate, all kinds of donuts.
Well, I had to get this joke in here. I don't want you to sugarcoat this. But didn't NPR pick up on this, and what's happening?
I got an email not too long ago from NPR Communications in D.C., and they want to use some photos I took of this for a post that they're going to do on Facebook. And on Facebook, I posted a comment not too long ago. I have a photo of the table where all the donuts were, and asking people to tell us where their favorite place is to get a donut in the St. Louis area. And there's already three comments there, and certainly welcome other people to tell us where they like to get a donut.
What do you mean where the donuts were? Because I hadn't gotten down there yet. And you mean they're gone?
No, I'm sure there's still some there if you want to grab some after the show.
So did you have one of each? And did you make your – have you voted?
I did vote, and there was no clear winner, let me say. A lot of fantastic donuts in the St. Louis area.
Well, you know, Cityscape always stays on top of the cutting edge of the arts and keeps our finger on the pulse of the community. And we're certainly doing this with this donut investigation and competition. And we want to thank you. The Great St. Louis Donut Taste-Off. And we'll have photos on the website maybe.
Right. And one of the comments on our Facebook page already was, any donut is a good donut. So I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Alex Hoyer. And now commentator Nancy Kranzberg shares these thoughts on the circus arts in St. Louis.
The modern definition of a circus is based on the ancient word referring to the actual performance area, a circle of sorts, in which gladiatorial events, chariot races, etc. took place. Today, the performers are quite different. We think of acrobats, clowns, and trained animals. We also tend to think of Ringling, Barnum & Bailey and the frenzied three-ring circus. But in reality, as one of America's oldest theatrical traditions, the circus started as a European transplant in the late 1700s and was perfected in the United States by the likes of John Bill Ricketts, who established the first American circus in 1798. Our own Mid-America Arts Alliance recently sponsored a traveling exhibition entitled Step Right Up, curated by Timothy Teggy, a longtime circus historian, collector, and performer. Teggy, a second-generation circus performer, was immersed in circus culture from the day he was born. According to Jessica Hentoff, the circus lady, who now performs with St. Louis's Circus Flora and one time performed with New York's Big Apple Circus, both artistic one-ring circuses, one doesn't have to grow up in the circus and be from a circus family to be a good circus performer. She is the artistic and executive director of Circus Harmony, St. Louis's only year-round circus school and social circus program based in the City Museum. Hentoff says she has worked with people from 5 to 82 years of age. She says, I've taught children of all labels, autistic, ADD, LDD, deaf, Down syndrome, physically handicapped, etc. Circus arts doesn't require one skill set. Maybe you can't juggle, but you can flip. Or you can't flip, but you have a great balance and can walk the wire. St. Louis is very fortunate to have Circus Flora, which is one of only three cities in the country with an annual resident circus that also provides year-round educational outreach programs. The organization has played an important role in the renewal of circus as a performing art. Circus Flora is recognized as the first circus in the United States to successfully tell a story using a plot and original live music. The narrative acts as a framework through which humans and animals perform in concert with one another. By integrating classic traditions of the circus with contemporary theater techniques, an ensemble cast, and compelling narrative, Circus Flora produces shows that consistently deliver wonder and world-class entertainment to audiences of all ages. Ivor David Balding is the artistic director and producer of Circus Flora. After working for Joseph Papp at the New York Shakespeare Festival, he founded the New Theater in New York and produced 21 plays. His productions were nominated for 2 Tony Awards and won 5 Obie Awards. He conceived and co-produced the Circus World Championships, which was broadcast worldwide on the BBC. These are just the tip of the iceberg of Balding's accomplishments. Cecil McKinnon, the theater director and featured performer Yo-Yo the narrator, has performed extensively with theater companies in New York, founded the Pickle Family Jugglers, a comedy juggling act that expanded into the Pickle Family Circus. In 1994, she received the first Citizens Exchange Council grant to travel to Eastern Europe to research circus in transition. Balding and McKinnon are just two of the forces that make Circus Flora the dynamic institution that it is. It takes a lot more than a little spit and glue to keep such a well-oiled machine running. Circus Flora has exceptional educational programs, such as Clowns on Call, which is Circus Flora's first year-round outreach program. Led by professional circus clowns such as Claire Wiedemeyer, Clowns on Call performers provide a magical distraction, engaging young patients in the circus arts while providing a respite from the world of tests and worry. Circus Flora has partnered with Kraft Alliance and the St. Louis Symphony, and you might have noticed some pop-up circus acts around town. Circus Flora and Jessica Hentoff's Circus Harmony are two crown jewels in St. Louis's thriving performing arts scene. I'm Nancy Kranzberg.
Nancy Kranzberg has been involved in the arts community for some 30 years on numerous arts-related boards. Next week on Cityscape, we'll talk about the Repertory Theater of St. Louis's season-opening production of Cabaret. And in our next installment of Soundbites, produced with Sauce Magazine, we'll explore the hit list of new restaurants in the St. Louis area. Join Don Marsh Monday for St. Louis on the Air, when he and his guests will take a look at a new report on the health and well-being of African Americans in the St. Louis area. Cityscape is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with assistance from Camille Phillips, Aaron Dorr, and Kristen Torres. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Cityscape is made possible in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Cityscape is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. I'm Steve Potter. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.